It's time for Money for Lunch, where we feed your brain and your business with supersized portions of business and financial news. Now your host, Bert Martinez.
Well, welcome everybody. Welcome to Money for Lunch. I'm glad that you're here. Always thankful for you, our local, our loyal listeners. Some of you guys also may be local, but loyal listeners, thank you so much. All right, so we're going to jump into it. We're going to get this party started with the quote of the day. A leader is best when people are barely, a leader is best when people barely know he exists. When his work is done, his aim fulfilled, they will say, "We did it ourselves," by Lao Tzu. A leader's best when people barely know he exists. When his work is done, his aim fulfilled, they will say, "We did it ourselves." Interesting thought from Lao Tzu. All right, we're going to jump right into it. Our guest today is Greg Cazera. Greg Cazera is the president of Learned Leadership and the director of marketing of Shale Crescent USA. He is a professional engineer, environmentalist, and leadership expert with more than 40 years of experience in the natural gas and oil industry. A regular magazine and newspaper columnist, Greg is also the author of books, two books, Just the Fracks, Ma'am, and Learned Leadership. The high school soccer team he coaches has won 14 regional and 5 state championships. He understands leadership and teamwork. Greg Cazera, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Hey, good to be with you, Bert.
You know what? I'm excited to have you here. And we were talking a little bit before the show, and we were, you were talking about one of the things that that our country is lacking is leadership. And you know, I think that one of the reasons that we are lacking in leadership is because we have gotten this weird idea that we're not supposed to do hard things, that we're not supposed to have problems, that you know, that somehow all these things are a detriment. And the reality is that we can do hard things, and our character is built or defined or shaped or enhanced when we accomplish or when we overcome hard things. Your take on this, am I in the right direction?
You know,
do you agree, disagree?
So spot on, Bert. And one of my favorite quotes, and that's a good one you just read too, is President Kennedy. "We're going to the moon not because it's easy, but because it's hard, and it defines our character as Americans." That's kind of a think about that. That was we just celebrated 50 years since the moon landing. And I remember being in grade school at the time thinking, and all my teachers were talking about how hard this was going to be. And, you know, it was like they doubted it. And I'm thinking, we're Americans. We can do anything, and we can pull this off. And, you know, think about how powerful Kennedy's dream was, because he didn't live to see it accomplished. But he was able to instill that in the whole country. And that's what I call a leader. I mean, a leader whose vision is so powerful that even when after their death, it lived on, and, you know, we've done so much as a country. And I use that as fuel for a lot of people that, you know, if you think you're having it tough, look what we've already done as Americans.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and I was reading this really sad article, and in this article, somebody had done some research and, like, 20 or 25% of parents were calling their college kids who live on campus or thereabouts, waking them up so they're not late for class. I'm old school. I mean, if my kids were missing class, I would show up one time with some cold water and possibly a, you know, some kind of a beating, And that would be the last time I would have to deal with that. Just, you know, you're spending my money and you're not getting there on time. Let me wake you up to reality. And, you know, it seems like, and this is the thing that I don't understand. A lot of these parents who are making their kids soft are parents who work their butts off to get to where they're at. I just don't understand why they don't see that there is a significant reward for hard work, for, you know, putting your head down and grinding away, and they seem to be robbing their kids, and they just don't understand that. I don't know where we got off track.
Well, you know, my son is a regional manager for a large company, and he called me one day, and he said, Dad, he says, I know when you were a manager, you did a lot of interviewing. He said, did you ever have an interview where the parents showed up with the interviewee? He said, I've had multiple of these, and I've never seen it. He said, the parents came with the guy that I was interviewing, and they asked most of the questions. And I said, did you hire him? He said, hell no. That is like, wow. I mean, it's kind of scary. That hopefully we haven't fallen to that level. I don't think so, because I'm still a high school coach. I'm working with young people and do a lot of even programs for young, high school and college students. And I'm adjunct professor at a community college, and I'm impressed with what I see. So I'm really hopeful that that's the minority, because like the students at the community college that I teach at, were working full-time jobs and attending class, and they were paying for it themselves. Matter of fact, one young lady was actually, her dad was unemployed, and she was helping him in addition to going to class, in addition to working a full-time job and paying for her own school. So those folks are doing incredible. And
yes.
I think if there's a problem we have is the people that aren't. I don't know what, you know, if they're concerned about why not, I think all they have to do is look in the mirror.
Absolutely. Well, and here is when I realized that it was a bigger problem than we ever expected, and that is there is an episode of Last Man Standing where the young man who's going in for the interview is accompanied by his mom, and the entire interview, the young man in question is texting on his phone and essentially doesn't say a word. And his mother's saying, whatever the kid's name is, Steve is a hard worker and he'll show up on time, blah, blah, blah. And of course, the owner of the business says, well, why don't we let Steve talk? And, and stuff like that. So, it's when the sitcoms are making fun of a subject matter, it must be, you know, more than a one-time occurrence. So I just thought that was just wild, and hopefully, there'll be some correction there. But back to your students that are, you know, the students that are paying for their own way, that have some skin in the game, that are doing some hard things, those are the ones that we want as leaders, and they will automatically emerge as leaders because they know how to deal with stress. They know how to deal with working hard. They know how to deal with, you know, call it rejection or having to overcome difficult times.
You're right. And I think the world, as I look at it, and I think your quote was so spot on, because as a leader, the way I look at the world, even as a high school coach, if we lose, that's not all my fault, but I got to look at, okay, what happened? When we win, it's everybody wins. But the key is those young men have to learn to deal with. Sports are great because you don't always win. And so when we do lose, okay, guys, what do we need to change? And one thing they can never do, they know I'll go off, you never blame the officials. If you lost, what did we do different? Why did we give that official so much control of the game? We weren't playing as well as we should. So they understand early on in the game that you start practice in August, and that's what determines whether you're going to be at the state tournament in November, how hard you work. And that's if you can drive that point home, and I think it takes leadership. And what I love is when I see the young men step up, and that's what we've seen for years. Those young men step up, and as adults, we can step back and watch them lead this thing. And it's thrilling to watch them. It takes about 6 weeks before they really begin to grasp and really start to take hold. But, boy, I'll tell you what, Bert, once that happens, it's phenomenal. I'll tell you a story, how power this, because as adults, how important this is to us, because you never know where that boomerang's going to go. But my wife, about 5 years ago, was in a really serious car accident, and it was bad. She was a diabetic. She is a diabetic, passed out, and long story short, flipped the car, rolled it like three times, ended up on its top, broke her neck, had a big gash in her head, and ended up in the emergency room. And that was on a Friday night. Sunday morning, this whole team of doctors comes in to the ICU. And, you know, they're talking in low whispers and, you know, serious business. And just as they're getting ready to leave, my wife says, she just whispers, "Doc." And the head trauma surgeon comes over, and he's got to put his ear down over her mouth because she's all tubed up and everything. And she said this, Bert, she said, "We have a trip to Disney World planned for the middle of next month. Is there any reason I can't go?" And the whole group starts laughing. And he looks at me and he says, "Well, you know, might be a little uncomfortable if you're driving." I said, "I got plane tickets." And he said, "No problem." Now, but here's the rest of the story, and the really important part is I recognize one of those young men. And as they're leaving the room, he looks at me and he says, "Do you remember me, Coach?" And I said, "Nathan, I'll never forget you." This was in 12. 1999, the first time, I was the first year I taught leadership to these high school young men, and they'd never been to a regional championship, never been to a state tournament, and that was their goal, to play for the state championship. And Nathan was the kid in the state semifinal game that scored the goal to put us on our first state championship as a school in soccer. I said, "Should I call you Dr.? And Nathan," he said, "Well, I am Dr. B, so you call me Nathan, Coach." But here's the cool thing. He understood a dream, because that's what they that was a real stretch dream for them at that point. Guess who my wife's doctor is for 5 days? She's got a dream to go to Disney World. He understands it. The next day, he's got her in a walker going down the hall. She gets discharged on Thursday. And now, 1 month later, I got a picture of her in front of a haunted mansion with our oldest granddaughter at Walt Disney World. And Dr. Nathan is now my wife's cardiologist. You know, and he's a leader. I mean, that's the stuff that, you know, I can't make this stuff up. I'm not that creative a guy. But you see how I didn't plan on that. But what a blessing to have that young man to be my wife's doctor. And now to have her in continuing as her doctor, it's phenomenal. He did the surgery on her 2 years ago since then. But that's what we have to be doing. We have to be developing. And Nathan got where he is today because of hard work, we went through a lot of adversity as a team, and I'm sure he did as he went through med school. But what I've learned is our biggest successes on the soccer field, in business, in my own business and in my life, have always come following usually some real serious challenges. And I think it's the challenges that we learn more from that make us stronger.
Yes, absolutely. You know, you look at some of our biggest innovations have come from our biggest problems. I mean, the space thing, that was kind of a self-inflicted problem because we chose to do that. But, you know, over and over and over again, you have these different products that were tested and made for that space mission. You know, we have thermopedic bed that was designed or created by the folks at NASA, and there's just a list of different things that came out of, quote, solving that problem of getting men to walk on the moon. And but putting that aside, give, you know, if there's a big problem out there, entrepreneurs have solved it, you know, or you know, innovative leaders have solved it, if you want to use that expression. It's just, you know, that's the way humanity is. And you give us a problem, we rise to the challenge, and we solve it.
And, you know, think about where we've gone. And you know, some of your younger listeners may not even remember this, but I remember the Arab oil embargo of the 70s.
Yes!
I also remember the energy crisis of the late 90s and early 2000s. And can you imagine, we've gone from the point where, you know, we had to worry about turning the lights off. And I mean, we were in serious trouble. I mean, we were getting ready to import natural gas from our friends in Russia and Iran. I mean, that's how bad it was in 2005. To be the point where we are now the energy gorilla of the world. I mean, we're the leading natural gas producer, leading oil producer. We've got nuclear power. We've got coal that we have in abundance, and we know how to clean it up. And we've got our renewable packages. So there's so much we can do as a country, and it's all because of, you know, we went through that hardship, and, you know, it was it's all about American ingenuity, American creativity.
Absolutely, absolutely. All right, so let's talk about this since you brought it up. Again, being joined today by Greg Gozera, and he's got two books out. One of them, Learned Leadership, I'm going to put that in the notes. And the other one, Just the Fracks, Ma'am, I'm going to put that in the notes as well, and you can link to them and check them out. So let's talk about what is happening. What does the picture of American energy independence look like under the, quote, Green New Deal, unquote? Talk about this.
Well, there is none. I mean, you know, and this is the point where I worry about, you mentioned our young people, and thank goodness the young people I get to work with are really good at putting pieces together. In other words, once you put things out there, they've been able to assemble this. Once they have truth, they seem to know what to do with it. But here's what the whole Green New Deal is, that they mentioned we're going to 100% renewables. Well, that, I guess I'm a dreamer, and you know, tell by, you know, high school kids, my wife, but we can't have 100% renewables. And it's not because I wish we could or wish we couldn't. It doesn't matter, because the sun doesn't always shine. We know that 12 hours a day on the average, we're going to have darkness no matter where you are on planet Earth. Solar panels don't work at dark. And to build batteries, that we're talking about some massive technologies, that, and we're talking about getting some rare earth metals out of some places like China that, you know, aren't necessarily our friends all the time. So, and the process to get those rare earth metals, it's creating radioactive lakes. So I have a problem with dead Chinese. I mean, I really do. That's not right. So you look at, but renewables right now, how they work best, sun shines during the day, and at night, natural gas kicks in, and then all of a sudden, you know, you've got 24 hours of light. With the Green New Deal, that doesn't happen. But it's a bigger problem that most people don't even think about, is you can't have windmills and solar panels without fossil fuels, because solar panels, the products that make those products, come from oil and gas wells that have all been fracked. They come from petrochemicals. And we wouldn't be having this discussion without oil and gas and hydraulic fracturing, because the phone I'm talking to you on is plastic. Airplanes, you know, anybody that says they're running for president, they're anti-fossil fuel, that's great. Then do what we always tell our young people to do as leaders. You got to set the example. And if I don't believe in fossil fuels, then by God, I shouldn't be on an airplane that's made out of plastic and fueled by fossil fuels, or a train, or an electric car is 70% plastic, petrochemicals. And we don't have we can go back to the 1850s, but my wife is on a CPAP. We got people on EpiPens. I mean, if you're anti-fossil fuel, that's like looking those folks in the eye and saying, it's okay if you die. And that's serious business to me. And that's a great leader needs to be thinking bigger than their election and bigger. They need to be begin to understand a bigger picture, because you're going to be leading the country. You need to be thinking about everybody.
Yeah, and I agree with you. Look, can we do more with wind and solar? Answer is yes. And can we get off of some of this stuff that we're doing? Absolutely. But I agree with you. I think 100% is currently not feasible. Now, again, that's a problem that maybe somebody smarter than you and I, or a group of somebody smarter than you and I, maybe they'll fix in 5 or 10 or 20 years, right? That's the great thing about having these problems.
The big deal is the petrochemical part. That's a real problem, because they're right now, renewables don't make petrochemicals. They only make electricity. You got to have other things to build those other components, and you can't grow them. I got good friends at Ohio State, and I said, "What about this?" And they said, "Well, Greg, the other problem is you get off fossil fuels. How are we going to feed people? We can't. I mean, these are folks that understand farming. They said you can't do it without modern farm equipment. You can't do it without some of the chemicals we actually have to use for, you know, fertilizing and pest control and whatever. So, you know, there's some things you can do. You can do organic farming, but you can't feed the world on organic farming. It takes too much acreage. So, you know, we need to be always looking to the future and looking to do better. But, you know, I'm also an engineer, so when I look at the background, I said, okay, show me. If someone wants to do something, you know, before we went to the moon, we built a rocket and we put a satellite in orbit. We took steps. So I'm still waiting. If this is going to be the trend, if we can really do this, I want someone, before we go all in and start killing people because we don't have petrochemicals or the light doesn't work 24 hours a day when the wind's not blowing and the sun's not shining, what I want to see is someone, one of those leaders, step up and say, okay, my county, we're going 100% renewables right now or in the next 5 years. Show us that it works somewhere, and then we'll believe you. If I tell my kids, don't smoke, guess what Dad better not be doing?
Right. Well, and again, I think what your point there is well taken, right? That it just, you know, we have these things that are an absolute necessity. You mentioned the EpiPens and some other uses like, you know, plastics. And, you know, plastics are literally everywhere now. I just read a report where they said the average human eats about a credit card's worth of plastic per month or something like that. Because plastic doesn't dissolve. It just stays in our, you know, it just keeps getting smaller and smaller. But anyway, putting that issue aside, you know, bottom line is, I agree with you. Look, there are certain things, you know, and if you're not doing an epi, look at all the plastics at a hospital. What are you going to do with all those plastics at a hospital, right?
Absolutely. Can you imagine going into surgery without plastics, without those nylon or those, whatever, those rubber gloves or whatever we want to call them? You know, I don't want a doctor operating on me without the, you know, I mean, I want to make sure that those instruments are clean, and I want to make sure that you know, but the modern electronic medical equipment that's finding so many of our problems, that's fixing so many of our problems, it's all plastic.
Yeah. So let me ask you this. So what do you think would happen to our future if we don't adopt this Green New Deal? I mean, you know, of course, you have one side that's saying, you know, the sky is falling. And of course, you have the other side that says, no, we're going to be okay. But, you know, you've been in this industry for what, 20 years, right?
40.
Oh, 40 years. All right. So
it's been a while.
Give us your take on it.
Well, here's, you know, and I think what I'd love to see is, and engineers are kind of shy people. I don't know if you realize that, but what I'm uncomfortable with is we got a lot of scientists and university people making these great proclamations. Very few engineers step up, and the sad part is a lot of engineers are very easily intimidated. So,
sure.
You know, they don't want to get into the mix. So so to speak, and so they'll just kind of sit back. And that's a bad thing because they understand what's going on. But here's what I look at is if we got a problem, and I'm going to assume we do, so how do you solve a problem? It's kind of like we did with the mission to the moon. We got a bunch of smart engineers and scientists and technicians together, and we fixed it. And there's right now today, what probably a lot of your listeners don't even realize, that the United States has lowered our CO2 levels by 14% in the last 8-10 years. The rest of the world is up 19. So can you imagine if we didn't lower our CO2 where the world would be? And the real problem is, even if we do the Green New Deal, the real danger is not here. We still, if all the naysayers, if all the people that are talking about catastrophic problems, if we don't, if they're serious, and if this is all true, if we don't fix China, India, and the other Asian countries where most of that CO2 is coming from, and not just CO2, a bunch of other garbage too, if we don't help them, and that takes leadership, because you can't pass a law in the United States and fix China. It ain't going to happen.
Right.
So we need people that understand how to influence. How do you influence the Chinese? How do you influence people from India? And how do you, because they don't want dirty air and dirty water, how do we help them? Because if we don't fix them, if we don't help them, it doesn't matter what we do here. It's all, and my thoughts are, let's put the right people together and come up with a problem. And that problem, the other thing that I learned is, as an engineer, don't assume what the solution is. For the last, 15, 20 years, we've said the solution is no fossil fuels, go to renewables. Take that off the table and say, look, here's the goal. We want to lower global CO2 by X, Y, Z percent.
Right.
Then turn them loose. Let them do it. Don't get in the mix. We don't need government telling engineers how to do their job. Just say, here's what we want for this country. Here's what we want for the planet. Let's all work together and do it. That's called leadership and teamwork, and it's possible. We've already seen it happen. But we need to have these scientists or these – there's a lot of groups out there that I'm not sure they're really for people as much as they're for an agenda. Because, you know, the real winner in this thing, if we would choose to do Green New Deal and get off fossil fuels, the real winner, the number two oil producer in the world, the number two gas producer, is a little country called Russia. And do you think they're going to quit production when we decide we're not going to produce any more oil and gas? Who the heck do you think is going to fill that void?
Right.
It's going to be Russia. And
here's my
situation
take
for the planet.
Yeah, you know what? And here's my take. Look, there are certain Arizona, this is where the government can do some good. Arizona has like 355 days of sun. And it seems that we as a society, as a government, should look at places like Arizona and Death Valley and say, hey, how can we harvest the sun here, right? I think a place like Arizona
yes,
is a great experiment
to say. That's solid engineering. Let's use
right.
Arizona where we got sun. Let's use Florida where we got sun. And Disney's doing a great thing down there. They've got solar panels out. And that park, the beauty of what they're doing, they got solar panels. And during the day when there's all these people in the park, the sun's shining. Well,
right.
At night when the sun goes away, that's okay because now they can use natural gas to fuel the park, or they can use, you know, even people write off coal. And I've seen some incredible, because we're so darn smart, you can almost eliminate. So that's why I don't think we ought to be taking anything off the table. Let our scientists, let our engineers actually work on the problem without government and some of these anti-groups trying to influence it, because that scares me. When people I'm convinced that some of these groups have got their own self-interest in mind and not us, we the people. And that worries me. That's very bothersome.
And that is, by the way, the biggest problem. You have these special interest groups who have big pockets and they know how to manipulate the system or work the system or however you want to phrase it, and those are really the big problems because – politicians cannot resist somebody who says, I'm going to donate millions of dollars to you, but you got to help me achieve this. And I think the reason that, you know, coal has gotten such a bad rep is because we've had not once, not twice, but numerous occasions where these coal, lakes, whatever they're called, have broken and have, you know, endangered people and crops and animals, and that's just unfortunate. It happens. And I think that could we, you know, it's, my brother has this saying, it's never so good it can't get better. It's never so
Absolutely.
Bad it can't get worse. And so, you know, could the coal industry do a better job? The answer is yes. But they could also do a worse job, you know. I mean, and so it's never so good it can't get better. I want to back up a little bit and talk about something that you said earlier, that we get a lot of our energy from fracking. I think you said something like that. What is fracking? Give us kind of a quick primer on that.
Sure. Hydraulic fracking is really pretty simple. It's pumping either water or sometimes even things like nitrogen gas. And all hydraulic fracturing is creating a crack in the rock deep underground that produces the oil and gas, and it creates a crack. And that crack to the gas molecule or oil molecule is like a super highway. And all it does is allow that material to flow to the well pipe and up to the surface. So we've been doing it for, 70 years. I mean, so that's the other thing that bothers me as an engineer. We got a process that's worked for 70 years. Nobody knew, nobody cared, and there weren't any big problems. And today there still aren't any big problems. And there were groups that were able to demonize it. And I was fascinating as an engineer when I first heard that. I said, nobody's going to believe that. The only problem was the oil and gas industry never came out right. They should have come out right away and said, that's wrong. What you're hearing from these folks is wrong. Here's why. And
yeah.
So, yeah, and the hard reality is every well's fracked. I mean, there's a few offshore wells that you don't need to do it, but for all intent and purpose, fracking is like putting tires on a car. If you don't frack, you don't have a well, you don't have oil and gas. And we frack. We've been doing it for 70 years. Russia fracks. The OPEC countries frack. So it's, you know, I think, you know, and most of the stuff, as a matter of fact, very little of the stuff that I actually hear from the anti-groups are true. They're really good at putting half-truths to this stuff. And that bothers me because that really impacts us as our, you know, our ability to produce petrochemicals, our ability to produce oil and gas. And right now, today, as we speak, Europe banned fracking. Well, shortly after that, Russia ran a 48-inch pipeline from St. Petersburg to Germany. Later this year, and it may be done already, they're running what they call Nord Stream 2 through the Bering Sea, another 48-inch pipeline of Russian fracked gas to Europe. Now, Europe's going to be buying Russian gas, two completely full pipelines of it. It's all fracked, and it's at Putin's price. So now I got a young grandson that's a Marine. So we know Putin's making money on that. And what's he going to do with that money? Is he going to spend it on his military, or is he going to build parks and schools with it? I don't know, but you can guess. As a
right.
grandparent, is there a possibility my grandson could be facing bombs and bullets and a military fueled in part because of the profits that Putin's making from Europe because they banned fracking? That's the rest of the story, and that really concerns me. And
well, let me ask you this.
Who's better to do that? Europe, if they did it, would do it under a lot of environmental controls like we have in the United States.
Right.
I've had friends that have worked in Russia. And
let me ask you this. Because we're getting short on time. So,
there are very few environmental concerns there.
Yeah, of course. Same thing with China. One of my, you know, I really dislike Chinese people are good. China government, not so good. And maybe we'll pick that topic up in a second. But I want to talk about this since you mentioned this European ban on fracking. Didn't New York do a ban?
Well,
I don't know.
Absolutely.
I don't know. Is that ban still in place? But what happened? Talk about that. Go ahead.
No, they and that was the same thing. I remember being at one of their gas meetings back in before they had the ban. And they were having these public meetings, and I said, aren't you guys going to those? They said, no. There's a bunch of crazies there. And I said, yeah, but if you're not there, they're going to say whatever they want, and people are going to believe it. And unfortunately, we have a frack ban in New York. is, and you know what's sad is that part of the state is, can you imagine being a farmer and right across the border in Pennsylvania, you've got this massive farm, you're making literally thousands of dollars on royalty payments, you've got a brand new motor home, you've paid off your farm, and you're on vacation, and I'm on the New York side, and I'm barely making my mortgage payment. That's the difference. And
yeah.
New York is, you know, they're still, the good news for New York is, even though, you know, Governor Cuomo doesn't like pipelines, what he doesn't get is, if you turn the gas off to New York City, there would be absolute chaos and darkness. That's how serious it is. And here's a guy that's in a position of power, position of leadership, and doesn't grasp. I mean, if he really believes what he says, let's shut New York off, let's run it on wind and solar and show us how it works, if that's what you believe.
Right.
And I feel like he's taking advantage of his – I mean, because everybody's got lives to live. And a lot of people, there's things I don't worry about. I don't know every detail about my car engine. I really don't care as long as it starts when I, you know, turn the key. And, you know, as long as the lights are on, the people in New York City probably don't care, and, you know, they'll believe whatever Cuomo wants to tell them. Turn those lights off. Go to the Green New Deal. Let's run this baby on wind and solar. Let's see what happens at night. It's not pretty. And if he doesn't believe it, go try it. Let's show us. Show us how it works. And if it works, we'll believe you, and maybe we all ought to get off it. But show us, if you really believe that, because you can't even drive, can you imagine? You can't even build a pipeline across New York to get to New England with natural gas. Now, last winter, and this is the second winter it's happened, they're getting LNG that comes from Europe, but it's Russian gas. We pay about $3 a thousand cubic feet. Throughout the rest of the country, except New England, when you're getting that gas from Russia, Bert, $100 per thousand cubic feet. And, you know, again, you think Putin's making a little money on that? I guarantee you he is. And, I mean, those people, if they really understood what was going on, they ought to be rising up saying, wait a minute, this is nuts. We ought to be using U.S. gas at U.S. prices rather than buying Putin's gas at $100. We should be buying U.S. gas at $3. I don't get
right.
it. I think that's
here's the deal.
That we ought
right.
to be educating people.
Here's the deal. Look, most of the time, somebody's always making money on these deals. So do you want Putin to make the money, or do you want, you know, us to make the money? When I say us, it's going to be some of our politicians, some of our businessmen, us. I'd much rather have
U.S.
us.
People that get have jobs because of that. I mean, you know, whether
thank
they're drilling wells, whether they're building pipelines, or whether they're running compressor stations.
Right. And so again, it's not perfect, ladies and gentlemen. But like you, I want to be able to come home, turn my light on, turn my AC on, and know that it's there. I am not an outdoorsy kind of guy. I am not the guy who's going to chop wood. I'm not the guy who's who was made and bred to be the camper type person. I like my creature comforts, and I think that if there was an incentive, again, some engineer. Some person smarter than me is going to figure out how to maybe scrub some of the CO2 stuff out of the air. There's a problem. Some innovative person is going to fix it, especially if they get incentivized. And we see this happen all the time. I mean, you know, you mentioned NASA, and one of you know, it's a great movie, but it's also a great tribute to the human spirit and to engineers. You know, Apollo 11, I believe it's Apollo 11, the movie, you know, where, you know, these guys, everything that can go wrong is going wrong. The CO2 is out of control, and they're starting to suffocate, or they will run out of
oxygen
soon. Oh, that's
Apollo 13, where they had that explosion.
Apollo 13.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, thank you. Apollo 13. And so, you know, so this guy comes to the conference room and he dumps all of this stuff, random stuff on the table and says, this is what our astronauts have. We have to fix their problem with the same stuff that they have access to. Let's get to work. And so, sure enough, within like an hour, they figure out a way to come up with a CO2 scrubber so they can clean up the air inside the space capsule or whatever it's called. And so my point being is, I think that there is a solution for every problem if we allow, as you said earlier, engineers to be creative and for government to get out of the way. I mean, it's just, you know, I have a distinct pleasure. I get to hang out with Schwarzenegger a couple of times a year. And we were talking, this is a couple, 2 or 3 years ago, where they had found a huge chunk of land that they wanted to use as a solar collection energy place. And they had, you know, it was going to hire like 400 or 500 people. It was going to reduce all sorts of, again, carbon stuff and just give California the energy that it needs because everybody's heard about the brownouts in California. And so a week or two or three before they're going to start breaking ground, the California EPA found that there was a rodent that made their that lived where the solar panel was, or the solar energy power plant was going to be erected, and they stopped this solar power plant because of this rodent. Now, I think that rodents are fairly smart, and if you are constructing stuff on their home area, they will move out of the way. Now, I am all for being nice to animals. I think that we you know, that is something that needs to be done. But a rodent, over 500 jobs and millions of people with solar energy. I just, you know, this is a perfect example of what you're talking about. You have a bunch of people who came up with a creative solution, and all of a sudden government intervene, and going on 15 years, 20 years later, that solar panel, solar power plant has not been erected. You know, ladies and gentlemen, we, as a citizen, as a citizenship, we need to take massive action. We need to vote people into office that are going to help us. And we need to say, no, I understand that this rodent family is important, but it's not more important than us. Anyway, but I thought that was a great example of what you were talking about, getting government out of the way. We got to solve some of these problems before we can move on to other problems.
And we have the people. I mean, we've seen it from the space program to energy to modern medicine, the things we can do. You know, cancer used to be a death sentence. It's not anymore. I mean, you know, I can speak from a personal experience that, you know, I'm here because of modern medicine. So I think we ought to be thinking, if we focus on people and if we focus on being smart, doing the right thing. And I think the challenge for people is emotion's great, but there's also a point that we have to use a little logic, and we have to really think about who's saying what and does this make sense. And, you know, understanding a little bit of science and math isn't bad, because, you know, you might have seen it, because I think it was your governor out there in California. He was talking about, it was a 60-minute program last summer. And the implication that, at least my friends were all calling me and saying, hey, looked like Governor Brown said he can replace a 3,000-megawatt nuclear power plant with 60 acres of solar panels. I said, no, he can't. It doesn't work that way. That means the numbers, I said, that's about 5 megawatts. That plant's got 3,000 in it. You can't do that. There's not enough. You need more land mass to be able to have a shot at it. And the nuclear plant works 24/7. Solar only works when it's sunlight. So those are the common sense things. So we need to know that, you know, we still need to keep nuclear around. We still need oil and gas. We certainly need natural gas, because that's the one fuel that when the sun goes down, you can kick it in. If we're smart about how we put these pieces together, Bert, and we got to build solutions, we got to be thinking bigger than that. That's what great leaders do, think bigger than just our own little problem. We got a world to fix. And whatever we implement here, can we take it to India? Can we take it to China? Can we take it to Japan? And can we help them to implement it there? Because that's the folks that we've got to help. And right now, we've got natural gas that's going to India. And to give you an idea of what it's doing to those folks, I got my pastor's from India. And he doesn't know, you know, my background, what I do. I just, you know, I ask him. And he was, there was an NPR program about 3 years ago. And they were talking about the air was in New Delhi was so bad, Bert, that they said half the school-age children, this was NPR, said that they had COPD. And as a grandfather, as a parent, that's devastating. I know people with COPD, yeah. And it's after they've smoked for 40 years. But a school kid having COPD because the air is bad, if they were starving, what would we do? We'd have collections in church. We'd be sending them food. We're not going to let kids starve. But it's just bad air. So, you know, nobody showed up with windmills and solar panels. Nothing happened until U.S. started sending shiploads of natural gas over there. And my pastor, I asked him, he was in New Delhi, I think, last year. I said, how's New Delhi? He said, oh, it's kind of a dirty city. And then he stopped, and he said, you know something, though, Greg? He said, since I was there last time, about 3 years ago, he said, the air's cleaner. And I said, what's going on, Father? And he said, well, you know, they're using more natural gas. So here's U.S., fracked wells, shipping gas, to India, that's cleaning up the air in New Delhi, helping school kids. Now, doggone it, to me, that's the right thing to do. We'll frack wells here. We know we can do it right and safe and clean. Ship our gas over there, and let's help some kids. I mean, nobody seems to want to – nobody else took that on. But that's the stuff. Now, and there may be down the road other ways, to your point, that we can find other technologies that will help those people. But at the end of the day – we better be thinking about cleaning up the air over there because it doesn't stay in India and doesn't stay in China. It's coming to California first and then my way after that.
Sure. Hey, listen, we're out of time. I want to say thank you so much, Greg, for stopping by. In the show notes, I put some links to not only Greg's website, but to his two books. Greg Cazora, thank you so much.
Cazora. Hey, there's another JumpCrescentUSA.com where you can see how this gas and our energy is being used to bring industry back to this country.
I love it. Thank you, Greg. Good stuff there from Greg Cazora. Cazora. I don't know why I'm always in trouble having trouble with that. My lips must be wearing out. Greg Cazora, ShellCrescentUSA.com, Shell, S-H-A-L-E, Crescent. USA.com. That's also in the show notes along with his two books, Learned Leadership, Just the Fracks, Ma'am. Good stuff. We can all do more. We can do hard things. We can overcome our problems. We can work together and make our lives better and really change stuff. We just sometimes have to not be complacent. Anyway, let's share this episode with everyone we know. Let's help more people understand what's going on with the new Green Deal or the Green New Deal and with fracking. As always, my friends, thank you so much for stopping by and sharing. Remember, you were created to succeed.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch and check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.